Hello and welcome to The Fathers, a show about two different kinds of fathers. A married dad of five kids and a Catholic priest. We're friends talking about sports, beer, movies, and the everyday joys and challenges we share in common. Hi, Father Chip.
Hey, Dom. Good to see you again, as always.
So my name is Dom Bettinelli, in case you're...
Just tuning in.
Tuning in for the first time, downloading for the first time. And
I'm Father Chip Hines.
Father Chip Hines. And we're friends. We live in the Boston area. Father Chip is a pastor of two parishes in
Walpole, Massachusetts.
Walpole, Massachusetts. Yes. And I have five kids. I'm married. I used to work for Father Chip, and now I don't. And I do something else. And we have this podcast.
There you go. And we should also state we were friends before you.
Yes.
Before you worked with.
Yes, and
me
miraculously stayed friends.
Yeah, well, that's because you know we can rise above things.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we're. I think, like I like to say, we're adults.
A rare enough commodity these days.
I mean, yeah, because I mean, yeah, I mean, not to dredge up a situation or anything, but I mean, that could have been, it could have got ugly and.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't because...
The circumstances worked out that the parish just couldn't afford to continue to pay, you know, have me as an employee.
Right.
And so I moved on. And I mean, it helped that I got another job right away.
Yeah, it did. That was very helpful. I was very, very happy about that.
Yes.
And well, and as you well know, I struggled with that whole decision process anyway. And
I think it took more of a burden on you than it did on me.
It may have. I felt like, you remember, I don't know if anybody out there watched Cheers a million years ago. There was an episode where Norm was given the job of being the guy who fired everybody.
The angel of death.
The angel of death. And but he took it harder than everybody else at first. And then he realized if he cried and made a big scene and everybody, they would comfort him and say, no, it's okay, Mr. Peterson, I'll get another job. You know, and so, I mean, it was just... I felt bad, and I think that that helped. But it wasn't all. It was just it's just a bad situation all around. I hated it. I wish we didn't have to do it. But and there's not a week that goes by where I say to, I usually say to Marty or somebody else, if Dom was here, we could do this because we would have you know. I say that all the time to the point of aggravation. I'm sure you know. But you know,
keeping the memory alive.
We do what we can.
So that I can be a source of aggravation.
That's right.
In absentia.
That's right. Why not?
So if you heard that bang, that's the kids, my kids going in and out the front door. Every time the front door opens and closes, everything in the house shakes. That's just the way
it
works.
Well, I mean, you know, knowing the house, I'm not surprised.
Well, speaking of house, in my ongoing saga, home improvement week three.
Oh my gosh!
So the roof is done, the chimney is done.
Finally.
So the guy came back. It was a month later after he had last been here. I didn't realize it had been a month, and he put the final sealant in the flashing, and then we had some pretty bad windy weather on Saturday, Friday and Saturday,
rain and whatnot.
It would normally have leaked. I think. I mean, time will tell. But I'm pretty confident that we've taken care of that. So no more leaks. When he finished, he rang the bell, and I came into the door, and he's like, "So you want to go up the ladder or the roof to check it out?"
Nope.
I'm like, "Nope."
I'm very happy down here.
Exactly. I don't want to be that guy that slides off the back.
No.
But he showed me pictures from his phone, and so that was fine. And as far as the interior ceiling, we remember last time, the guys had packed up and left.
They left. That's right. Did they ever come back?
They're coming on Thursday.
Oh, okay.
So it's been 2 weeks.
That's like 2 weeks ago.
It's literally two weeks ago. Well, yesterday. Yeah. It was 2 weeks ago. They started the job, and I've been bugging the guy ever since. And I'm like, dude, we're very busy.
Oh, yeah, well, good.
Good
for you.
Yeah, except you need to finish the job. Yeah, so I got a text from him today that he's coming back.
My money is green.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's a small job, and that's the problem. It's a small job in the grand scheme of things.
Sure.
And they need to fit it in among the big jobs, and that's a pain.
I get it. It's a, but. Even when it's a small job, I mean, you said you'd do it. I'm giving you money.
Right.
You're not doing it for free.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if you want to do it for free and you want to string me along for a while, fine. I'm good with that.
But right.
I'm actually paying you money.
So, yeah, actually, for a while there, I was thinking, how long does it take, like, if someone abandons a job, a contractor abandons a job, before I can legally just say, I'm not paying you? And I'm going to get somebody else.
It's a good question.
I did a little quick research. I couldn't find anything really definitive, but yeah.
Oh, and if anybody cares, I got my chair.
And the chair, right.
You know, that was funny because it came, it came that day, remember?
Yeah.
And it came, and my chair was there when I got home, and I got a text from somebody who had actually answered the door for me, and the chair is there, and it's very comfortable, and I'm very, very happy with
oh,
it.
Oh, good.
So, well, good. I know that's everybody's joy and concern.
Well, good for Robert's Discount Furniture, yes, the fictitious name that we gave to the...
Good old Robert's.
The furniture store.
At least the chair is comfortable.
So, in other news, now that we've followed up on previous shows, previously on the Father Show.
That's right. This is not a very special episode, though. Maybe we'll do one someday.
Finally, Dom finally hits puberty.
There you go. Dom started to notice girls.
Which is pretty good, given I have 5 kids.
There you go.
So what's happened since then? So Rogue One became available on streaming.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got it on iTunes. And the kids who hadn't seen it yet, they'd seen almost all the other Star Wars movies, including Phantom Menace, which I decided to show.
Despite the fact that it's not the greatest movie ever made.
Yeah. It's better than the other two prequels.
It is.
Like, the prequels get progressively worse.
That's the truth.
But... that I did, so they were all looking forward to Rogue One.
Okay.
I was a little worried because I just want spoilers.
Spoiler
I'm
alert.
I'm going to spoil the ending for you. So
Spoiler alert.
If you have not seen
Rogue One. If you haven't seen Rogue One, you might want to skip ahead a couple of minutes.
Yeah, skip ahead like at least 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So now that I've given you the warning.
Warning.
I was afraid that they would be upset by the fact that everybody dies at the end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was wondering where you were going with that, but yeah, it's just the nature of that movie, and it's unfortunate because I think there's some really cool characters in the movie.
Right.
And you know, it would have been nice to have had more time and adventures with them, but it was the nature of what they were doing, and it was the nature of the movie. I mean, apparently, you know, it's meant to be standalone. It's a standalone story,
exactly.
And that's it, and they're gone.
If they had survived, why were they in the other stories?
Right.
So it just made sense for them to be like that. I did have to, at one point, as the last battle was going on and people were dropping, like, one of them, I think Anthony kind of turns to me and says, Daddy, Do they survive? And I just have to, normally I would be inclined to say, just watch and you'll see. But I'm like, I got to kind of prepare them for it. I'm like, no, they don't, buddy. No, everybody's, they're going to give their lives. They're heroes.
They're heroes, yeah.
And so he was okay. They were okay with it. They were fine.
Okay.
I was in fact, surprised at how fine they were. They were pretty fine with it. I think they were more concerned with K2SO, the robot.
Oh, well.
But kids tend to be that way.
But that's something you could bring back if you wanted to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, it was funny. You know that Alan Tudyk, the actor played K2SO,
right?
Who was also Wash in Firefly,
right?
And you remember how Wash goes in? Okay, this is a spoiler, but if you haven't seen Serenity, the Firefly movie, more than 10 years after it was out, I don't think you get a spoiler warning.
Yeah,
on that.
No.
So Wash dies,
right?
But he dies after giving out the line, I'm a leaf on the wind. Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, so Firefly fans are all like, they hear I'm a leaf on the wind. They know exactly what it is.
Yeah,
waiting for, like, at some point, like, I was watching the behind the scenes things. I was waiting for, at some point in that final scene where K2SO dies, is him to go, I'm a leaf on the wind. But they didn't. That would have been awesome.
You know, it's funny how Firefly has survived over all these years.
13 episodes.
Yeah, on 13 episodes.
Yep.
One movie, you know, and it's amazing that people still, I mean, what's his, Nathan Fillion, still sort of a folk hero, you know?
He is.
It's unbelievable.
It is kind of wild. Now, I wonder if some of that is just that it was a really good show that if it had, say it had gone on for 5 seasons and ended, would it have had that same capture the imagination?
I'm not sure that it would have,
no,
to be honest with you. I think it's the short nature of it.
Right. It was so good for such a short time,
yeah,
and it was such a stupid decision to cancel it.
Well, I think that that's the other part of it too, is that the dumb decision that went into to canceling the show. It's like when you know, it's like Star Trek when they canceled Star Trek,
and three seasons,
that's it, and then it became the greatest worldwide phenomenon next to Star Wars, you know, as far as science fiction goes. And some would argue it's probably bigger than Star Wars. It may be, I don't know.
Yeah,
but it certainly is something that has continued on dramatically, amazingly well. I mean, certainly more than Firefly. I mean, Firefly, they only made the one movie to kind of sort of wrap it up.
12 movies, Star Trek movies, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing number of movies.
And then they have the original series, the animated series, Next Gen, DS9, yep, Voyager, Enterprise.
Which I haven't read too much about. They keep on moving the date of its debut, and that makes me nervous.
I watched this YouTube video where the guy goes over all the rumors coming out about it.
And oh, okay.
I think your nervousness is justified.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, there's this big. So the guy who is the showrunner who is bringing it back, Brian Fuller or something like that, he left in November. This was the guy who had the vision, who had previously been a writer on DS9.
Right.
And then, because Les Moonves, the head of CBS, who doesn't get science fiction and doesn't like it, is micromanaging the show.
Unreal.
They've got these two people who are now running it, who aren't science fiction or Star Trek fans, really. And one of the things that people are saying is they keep... The idea was that you've now got two timelines in Star Trek. You've got the original timeline of this TV series and the original movies, and then you have the J.J. Abrams. They call it the Kelvin timeline, which is like where it splits off again and where Chris Pine is now Captain Kirk. And so this TV show is supposed to be set in the original timeline.
Right.
And then we're going to set it between Enterprise and the original series.
Right.
I don't know why. I felt like part of the handicap on Enterprise was, you know where it's going to end up.
Right.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of suspense because have to end up in a certain place.
Exactly. You can't screw that up.
Right.
If you do, you're screwing up the whole mythology of everything.
Well, apparently they're screwing up the whole mythology of everything because they're making changes to aliens, to events, to ships, to everything that just doesn't match up with the original series.
Well, then no one's going to want to watch it.
Exactly. So they're having so much hassle.
I wouldn't want to. I don't want to watch something that's going to ruin Star Trek. I mean, why would I do that?
Exactly.
Why would anybody do that?
Well, and plus they're putting this streaming thing.
Yeah,
so I've got to pay.
That's really annoying.
$5 a month just so I can get CBS series.
One series, because I could care less about The Good Fight and all this other crap that they're putting on there.
Right. That I can watch for free, by the way.
Right.
On broadcast.
Right. No, The Good Fight you can't. The
Good Fight's going to be streaming only,
too? The Good Fight's going to be streaming only. It's the continuation of The Good Wife, as if that screamed out for continuation. you know, I don't know how that lasted 7 seasons or something like that, but somehow or another, it screamed out for a sequel that had to be on their website instead of on their network. I don't understand it. Yeah. I mean, are you Netflix or are you CBS? You know, pick one.
The other problem is that Netflix paid $1 billion for the worldwide streaming rights for this Star Trek Discovery.
Did they really?
It was that's been reported. It's been $1 billion.
That's insanity.
And so
sight unseen?
Well, it's Star Trek, right? That's the idea. It's Star Trek. You have a built-in fan base. And so it would so
you
Americans
screw up Star Trek. It happens.
Well, this is the thing, is Americans would be paying $5 a month or whatever it is, or $10 a month for this CBS All Access. Everybody else in the world gets it as part of their Netflix subscription.
Oh, beautiful.
But Netflix
we get rooked.
Right, and Netflix is sitting there going, it was supposed to come out this past January.
Yes.
Then they said May,
yep.
And now they said sometime later. And Netflix is going, we gave you guys $1 billion. Like, basically, the Netflix money is paying for the production of this show.
Of course. And they're screwing it up,
and so
apparently.
Everything else is gravy. And Netflix is going like, we want to see our product here.
Hey, you got a show you can show us?
Exactly. So, it actually kind of reminds me of the TV show episodes that was on Showtime.
Oh yeah, I loved that show.
I mean, it was pretty foul.
It was foul, but it was funny. It was funny behind the scenes TV stuff.
Yeah,
that rang true.
It did. It did.
You know, the whole
Matt LeBlanc playing
a weird version of himself. A weird
version of himself. Yeah. And these two British
writers
who had a hit show in Britain that was then bought by an American network to produce an American version. And of course, they weren't allowed to make like the British version. It had to be completely changed into this really awful sitcom.
Instead of being a show about a school headmaster, it became a show about a hockey coach.
A high school hockey coach.
It was so ridiculous. But that was why it was so funny. Because it was, and LeBlanc did not want to be on the show.
Right. The character LeBlanc.
It was so funny. And he had an ex-wife who was foul-mouthed. He had children who I couldn't tell whether they cared one bit about him or not. He had a stalker. that he liked to string along because I think he liked the attention. And then you have these two British writers trying to sort of fit into the world of Hollywood and not quite getting it, which makes me wonder what like TV is like in England, you know, like what's the TV world in England like? Is it such a rarefied air that, you know, coming over here? I mean, these are the same people that, you know, were making, I mean, we both love Doctor Who, but the original Doctor Who was not exactly made on a million-dollar budget an episode.
But more recent British TV is doing pretty well.
It's doing very well, but I mean,
but it's different.
You know, yes,
it's different. Well, and the funny thing is that like the TV, the network executives, like the vice president in charge of comedy?
Yeah.
Was this woman who was not funny and never got anything?
Yeah, and her laugh was like weird. She was. And there was always a jockeying for power and, and then they had their original boss got let go and they brought some new guy in who was just a real raving weirdo.
He's a lunatic.
And initially, I guess the first couple of seasons, it was funny. And I mean, I think it may have gone on a little too long. I think there's one more season left that they filmed already. And Matt LeBlanc's having kind of a weird career. I mean, he did this episodes, which was critically acclaimed.
Yep.
And now he's doing this sitcom on CBS, which is, you know, it's popular, but it's not critically acclaimed by any stretch. But he's also doing Top Gear.
Yeah, yeah. There's sort of a Matt LeBlanc moment.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
It's weird. You know, yeah.
Well, I wonder, is the Top Gear thing because of the episodes thing? Because episodes was sort of a cross, like, it was both Showtime in America, but it was also being shown in Britain.
Right.
So it was because it was sort of both,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. So I don't know. Anyway, we got far afield off of Rogue One
and other things.
Well, the other thing that I was doing is that other guys might be interested in. I got measured for a custom suit.
Wow.
Yeah. So funny story.
Why?
So I need a suit. The suit I have now is I got, I think, 17 years ago, and
like most men,
and a couple dozen pounds. A couple dozen pounds less. So it doesn't fit very well anymore.
Okay.
And there's this guy. So I work for Massachusetts Citizens for Life, which is a pro-life group organization in Massachusetts. We have a board, a volunteer board. And one of the guys on the board is a custom clothier. He does men's custom clothing. He's done some for athletes and other stuff. And he said to me at, one of the board meetings once, like, hey, look, if you ever need a suit, let me know. You know, I can tell just looking at you would be difficult to get off the rack stuff to fit.
So he's got a point there.
He does have a point. And so, you know, Melly and I have been, you know, looking at stuff, and we found some money in the budget. Now, look, I'm not getting a $2,000 custom suit from Hong Kong. You know what I mean?
Aww.
That's not what we're talking about.
It's not coming from Savile Row in
He's going to give me a bit of a discount, and I'm going to get, you know, something that's a little, like, it's still custom cut, but it's at a bit lower the price range. But it's not going to be a $200 Joseph Bank special.
Right.
We're looking probably around $600 or $700.
Okay.
So
still good chunk of change.
Right, it is. But it's the sort of thing that once you have it, it'll last.
Yep.
Like he was telling me like the differences. Like in a custom cut suit, like the way they do it is they call it full canvas. So the skeleton of the suit, the structure of the suit, and off the rack suits, there's like, it's half canvas. So from basically the shoulders to about your mid back, there's a structure and everything else just kind of hangs.
Right.
Whereas in a full canvas, it goes all the way down.
Hmm.
And then you've got, when he measured, he measured everywhere. Like he measured armpits. He measured, well, yes, we measured inseam, but we're okay there.
Oh, okay. There's no cupping. Yeah.
Exactly. Good. Are you left or right? No, none of that. We didn't, that never came up.
Good. He wasn't a tailor in prison. Good.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah.
So, let me gather myself together.
All right. Sorry.
But like he measures the armhole, measures your bicep, measures your elbow, measures the length of your, from your elbow to your wrist, like measures the width of your wrist with the watch and without. The watch without, and the wrist without the watch, make sure. And he's like,
how long did this take?
It took about 45 minutes to an hour.
I was going to say, yeah.
Like he was told, like my left shoulder is a little lower than my right shoulder.
Did you have to do one of those things where he's like, okay, now I'm going to measure your waist. So you just, you need to be. You need to like let out breathe all out. That breath, breathe out, you know, so that I can get an accurate measurement. Did he do that?
No, but I mean, he kind of just said, you know, relax, just, you know, stand relaxed.
But it's hard to.
Yeah.
It is, because I remember getting measured for a suit once and, you know, it's hard to let go of the...
when you're a big man, you're used to holding it in.
And you're used to holding it in. It's hard to do. It's hard not to do that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we were fine. He was, good. You know, we got that. And then, but it was really great. Like, then it's like, I'm just like, I don't really have a big strong preference for, like, all the different options. I'm not like a fashion plate. This is just like one suit.
I can attest to that, not a fashion plate.
But like, I'm not going to have a closet of suits. Like, so I'm like,
I'm going to say not.
Yeah. So, I got like a navy blue fabric, a nice 100% wool navy blue.
Nice.
So what do we get for the lining? And I'm like, I don't know. Like what? So he opens up this book, like it's got like 100 different things and
something that's smooth and slippery, so I can get in and out of my suit real quick.
Exactly. No, this is so. I mean, you could get like leopard print and like all kinds of crazy stuff. Like only if you're an NFL defensive back that you would get.
Plain.
Well, so I got like a paisley, and I was gonna get like a blue, like a very light thing. But I'm like, oh, maybe I go for a little. Like he's like, you know, if you get something a little classy but a little different, it says this is a custom suit, and it kind of says something. So
statement suit.
Yeah. So it was like a light gold, I guess.
Okay.
But you get like a nameplate that they put in there, and he does a cut. He's like, well, what do you need for pockets? I'm like, well, I need, you know, carry my phone and stuff. Okay, well, we'll do a phone pocket. We'll also do another pocket for your billfold.
Ooh, and, I like that.
You know, you're left-handed. We'll put the pockets on the right. You know, I mean, like,
that's good. That's good stuff.
I mean, it was really great. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. I mean, if I have a suit that fits and that feels comfortable,
you might wear it.
I'm more likely to wear it.
Well, that's the same with every piece of clothing, right? If it fits and it's comfortable and you like the feel of it, you'll wear it. And that's the whole key to it all. But I mean, it would be nice if, you know, if we could both lose a few, you know, a little bit of weight, then it would, you know, we'd be fine.
Well, but one of the things he asked me is like, do you think you might, you know, be gaining or losing a lot of weight?
I hope I'm going to lose weight.
Exactly. I said, well, the doctor said I should lose some weight. He goes, okay, so what I'll do is I'll cut it in such a way that we can bring it in.
Yeah.
And so it'll continue to hang right.
Okay.
But like,
that's good, because they can leave fabric. They can leave the fabric inside, which is nice.
Exactly, exactly. One of the things he said was, so he measured the chest, which I'm a big guy through the chest, but then he measured across the arms as well. And he's like, you're like my proportions, but from chest size to chest plus the arms is itself unusual.
Yeah.
So there's a reason, and I'm not a tall guy.
No.
So there's a reason, you know, why it's always difficult for me to find clothes that fit okay. So a custom suit, like, I always thought custom suit was like you did that if you go to Savile Row in London, or, you know, or if you have a chance to fly to Hong Kong, and, you know.
I didn't realize Hong Kong was a big suit place.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's between Hong Kong and London. You know, and then there's, you can get an Italian suit.
You and I are not Italian suit people.
Well, it's like we talked about cuts, and he's like, well, there's the Italian cut. That's a little like, but, you know, that's not for you.
No.
I'm like, no, that's not, you know, the, no.
No.
You know, like shiny shark skin. No.
No.
But, no, Hong Kong is big, actually, and guys who travel a lot for business to Hong Kong, often will buy suits there.
Are they cheaper over there, do you think? Or
I don't know that they're cheaper. Maybe, like, yeah, I think you can get cheaper.
Okay.
In fact, it probably is cheaper than, like, doing it here. But, like, because even here, they don't do all the cutting here. They have them. It's cheaper for them to have someone in Hong Kong doing the cutting and then sending it back and forth.
All right.
Like, one of the things he even does is he'll cut a shell. So it's basically, it's like a suit jacket, except it's not finished,
right?
But it's the dimensions, and they'll send it, and then I'll put it. He'll have me put it on, and then see how it hangs and make adjustments.
Gotcha.
And send it back. Apparently that's the way to go.
Well, there you go.
I mean, custom suits, guys. I mean,
I mean, I'd be interested to hear what guys think about custom suits, or whether they have custom suits,
Do you ever have a bespoke shirts or other kinds of, bespoke clothing?
Mm.
That's one of the other things he said, is that we can do, a custom shirt and other stuff like that.
This guy's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody local in the Boston area is looking for somebody, I can certainly recommend him so far. I mean, I've had such a good experience so far. So
you're going to say who it is or no?
His name's Ryan Hawk. Which sounds like a superhero's secret identity.
I'm Ryan Hawk.
Or a secret agent. But let me double check that, because I want to make sure I got his name wrong at one point.
Uh-oh.
And I just need to
my suit doesn't fit right now because I got his name wrong.
Ryan Hawk.
I've never had a custom suit. I've been measured for other things, like maybe a tuxedo or something like that, where you're renting it. Oh, well, we want to get it right. We want it to fit right. But I've never had a custom suit, and I've always thought it would be nice to do that, but it just always seemed like a pricey, an extra thing that I really didn't have the money for.
Well, as a priest, you're wearing a custom suit all the time.
Well, I'm wearing black. Yeah. I'm wearing black all the time.
But you're wearing your blacks, but you often will wear a suit jacket.
Yeah. Yes.
So he could do just a suit jacket for you, right. In the custom. I mean, that's would be
interesting.
It'd be something to think about.
I like the idea of having an extra pocket in there, for the phone and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. He was talking about, like, these different kinds of pockets. Even like he's got, there's like a ticket pocket you can put on the outside. That's that's a classic thing. It's sort of, it looks fancier. Like,
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's especially for guys who buy lots of suits. Sometimes you want stuff that kind of stands out.
Right.
So
interesting.
So what's new with you? Busy?
Yeah, a little busy, coming up to Holy Week. So, we've had a pretty active Lent in the parishes, and just a lot of different things going on. We did the Bishop Bob Barron Pivotal Players series.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't do all of them, but we did. We kind of picked out the ones, well, I shouldn't say we, I picked out the ones that I liked, mm-hmm. because I thought it would be more interesting for me. And since I was giving my day off, I figured it better be interesting to me. So we got snowed out once, so we didn't get to G.K. Chesterton, but next time we will. We'll do it again, and we'll just do the others. Yeah. We can still do, we can squeeze one more year at least out of the box, and then maybe skip a year and then go back and do the originals again or something. I don't know. But anyway, we did that, and we've got, I think tomorrow, we have Tenebrae, which typically is during Holy Week, but for whatever reason, we can't do it during Holy Week. And then we've been trying to get a bus of people together to go to the Chrism Mass.
Okay, wait. First, Tenebrae is...
It's
service of candles and sort of music and
darkness. Yeah, music, darkness, prayer. It's supposed to get you ready for...
So there's prayers and music, and as each thing, prayer is said...
Yeah,
is put out until eventually everything's in darkness except for one candle.
Right.
Okay.
So...
And then the Chrism Mass is... every diocese is a little different.
We do it on the Tuesday of Holy Week. Some do it on Monday. Some do it on Holy Thursday. I think in the way that the church sort of plans things, it is a Holy Thursday activity, so to speak. But everybody realizes that Holy Thursday is very busy, and so they don't want to, so the diocese some years ago decided to do it on Tuesday of Holy Week, which is fine. And that's where not all, but a good number of priests go to the cathedral, a good number of the faithful, and all the holy oils that we'll use for the rest of the for the new year are blessed by in our case Cardinal Sean or your whoever your bishop is, and then distributed. But in the process of that, we also renew our priestly priestly vows, and we do that together with the cardinal. And it's a very positive and powerful experience. And typically, the homily is some sort of aimed at the priests, and but also relevant to the faithful. And
it's usually the cardinal's best homily of the year, I think.
Usually, it is his best homily of the year. He seems to take that one, you know, fairly.
It's sort of his
favorite thing, I think.
His theme for the coming year.
Yeah. So, at any rate. So that's coming up. We're trying to organize a group of parishioners to go. They've never done that before, and it was just brought up as an idea, so we said, let's try it. And then, of course, we got Holy Week in both parishes, because I have two parishes, so there's two of everything, which is always something. And, you know, so we're busy. We're getting busier, it feels. Palm Sunday, we're doing a family day with a pancake breakfast and a food drive and a prayer walk. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on right now. And so, like, today is sort of a lull before everything starts. And on top of that, we've been doing our parochial school's been being in the reaccreditation process. You know, and we have a team there right now. They came in last night, and they're here till Wednesday. So I've got to meet with them tomorrow and go. You know, it's just, and we had a big dinner last night for them. So there's been a lot going on, and it's a lot. We're just busy, which is not bad. It's a good thing. I'm happy we're busy. I'm glad there's a lot going on. I'm glad that we have a lot of stuff happening, because it just shows that we're trying, and B, people are responding to things, and so it's good. I'm pleased with it.
It's not a busy, like, everything's falling apart busy.
It's busy,
busy,
like,
because lots of good things are happening.
Lots of good things are happening.
That's
busy.
Good.
Yeah, it is
good. Well, Holy Week is, Holy Week, Christmas is a big deal, but I think that's more of a big deal for sort of a family time in the church, but Holy Week is the big deal for the church as a whole. I mean,
I call it the Super Bowl of Catholicism.
Yeah,
because it really is. It is just everything leads up to that great moment of the resurrection, and you know, it's a building up process. You know, those 3 days, it really builds up, and you know, I think if you do it right, and it's well done. It's enjoyable, but it brings you through the emotions of, you know, the Last Supper, the death on the cross, and then the resurrection. And so you really just have that, what probably took place, you know, condensed sort of, but this is sort of it's just a process of bringing it to everybody's life and experiencing it on a 3-day process. I think. It's my favorite time of the year, even though it's really super busy. I think people sometimes in the parish, they overthink it sometimes. Like, we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to tweak this, we need to tweak that. No, let's just do it. It's all laid out. The church tells us what to do. We do it, like, boom, 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 do it. You know, don't try to make it something that it isn't. And that's what I always feel like I'm standing in the breach wherever I am. It doesn't matter what parish you're in. You know, there's always somebody that wants to, you know, innovate, you know? So, and I'm not.
What if we did?
No. How about we just do what the Roman Missal tells us to do?
Do the black, say the red.
Right. Exactly.
So from a family perspective, you know, especially if you have small kids, Holy Week is jam packed with things to do. You know, especially, you know, really like Holy Thursday night. So you get the Mass at the Last Supper. Then you've got Good Friday service, you know, the commemoration of the crucifixion.
Yep.
Then you've got the Easter Vigil Saturday night.
Yep.
And then you've got Easter Sunday Mass. And you could do all of that.
Or not.
Or just do Easter Sunday Mass if that's what you can do. We, in the past, you know, again, we've got 5 kids, 10 and under. We've done all various elements of that. There were a few years ago, I took the 2 oldest girls to Holy Thursday.
Nice.
Generally, as a whole family, we go on Good Friday. We go to the Good Friday service.
Excellent.
We went to this last year. We went to a parish that I will not name, where we will not go back again, because the three priests sat in the sanctuary and the deacon led the liturgical service, which is not supposed to be done.
Yeah, that just doesn't. And why be there?
You know? Right. It's just and it's just like this.
Why are you doing
this?
This
is the Triduum. Come right. on.
Yeah. Let's.
So we need to find a new place to go this year. And it wasn't it wasn't my parish. My parish is also part of a collaborative, and they do Good Friday service at a parish that's on the far side of the city that it's in. So it's kind of, it's
makes
a hike
it more
for
difficult.
Us. Yeah. So we just need to figure out what we're going to do. We might actually go to it, but we need to figure out what we're going to do. One year we took all the kids to the Easter Saturday, the vigil mass,
yep.
Which was a mistake. And,
well, it can be long.
They were young.
And they're young.
They were younger than
they are now.
Than they are now. And oh my gosh. Like, so I once recounted the story of what happened during the radio show The Good Catholic Life that we used to do. And that was one of the funniest episodes we did. So maybe I'll grab a link to that, because
You should.
It was quite an event.
Yeah.
Me, you know, rushing screaming children out of the church and various, you know, children falling asleep here and there. Oh, we'll see next time we can do that.
But, won't you be glad when they're all older, though, when you can do stuff together like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's something that's to be said about when they're young and they're experiencing things for the first time and they're excited. True. You know, once they're teenagers and sullen and they don't want to be there. I mean, that's sort of a generalization. I mean, I'm not all teenagers are like that, but
and I'm hoping yours aren't.
No. They're still pretty excited about things even now. But I like to experience when they're little and they're seeing and doing things for the first time is really a lot of fun. But that's like every stage, it's a different kind of experience.
Right.
So, but you're right. Once they're older, it'll certainly be easier. I see my brother with his kids that are much older, and how much easier it is for them to do things. So. You know, it's a phase. Everything's a phase.
Everything's a phase. A life of phases.
Yes.
There you go.
So, talking about taking kids to the Easter Vigil makes me think of drinking.
Hey, because you really, after that, you
after
need
that,
a pop.
I needed a drink. Yeah. But, so what are you drinking today, Father Chuck?
What am I drinking? That's a good question. We are drinking it's still water, artisanal.
Artisanal.
It's called Stateside Saison. And, you know, it's that same kind of, I like it because it's got that kind of refreshing taste. It's not
right.
It's not that overwhelming other thing taste, you know, and I'm not going to bash IPAs like I always do. But
the IPA bashing podcast.
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. We could do a whole podcast on that.
Where we just bash
IPAs. But, you know, it's got that kind of a crisp taste, and it has an aftertaste, but it's different. It's not, it's a different aftertaste. It doesn't have an aftertaste that lingers on for, you know, hours afterwards and make you feel, you know, bad.
Nice light.
It's light.
Yeah.
It's a light, refreshing beer, and I like that. That's my typical thing that I like.
Well, that sounds good. Yeah. So, Father Chip, when I say beer brewed in Ireland, what do you think?
Guinness.
And then this, what else do you think? What's the second one?
That's the Smittix.
Oh, actually, I don't know Smittix. I was thinking Harp.
Oh, Harp too. Yep.
Well, I'm drinking none of those.
I didn't think you were.
I'm drinking a beer craft brewed in Ireland, O'Hara's Irish Stout.
Oh,
it's O'Hara's O'Hara. Irish Stout, you know.
O'Hara was a good man.
He was a good man, you know. Because you got to say, you know, at the end.
You know.
Oh, you know.
My man.
With my wonderful Irish accent. I bet everyone out there thought, where did this Irishman come from?
That's the first thing they thought. Wait till he drinks a Scotch ale. Then you'll love it.
From Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. You can take our heads.
Oh, boy.
But so this is, it's actually pretty good. I picked it up. I'm like, an Irish stout that isn't Guinness is.
And how's the taste?
And it's.
Take a sip, yeah.
Take a sip.
All right.
It's very Guinnessy. I mean, it's Irish stout. Guinness is the definitive,
Irish stout.
So it's very Guinnessy in the sense of it's smooth, it's sort of milky, full bodied.
Sounds good to me. I like Guinness. I you know, and the interesting thing about Guinness is it is people don't realize this, the calorie count in a Guinness is actually lower than the average beer.
Exactly.
And it's sort of, I mean, it's not a light beer per se, but it's certainly probably has less calories than the Saison I'm drinking right now. So.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And Guinness was always promoted years ago. Like, I mean, we're talking about Guinness instead of O'Hara's, but
sorry,
but you know, but Guinness was promoted years ago as sort of a nutritious beer. It was, you know, that it had all kinds of nutritional value, and I mean, in an era where people, you know, didn't drink the water and that sort of stuff. I mean, it has, and it's not like people think, oh, it's strong tasting, so therefore it must be very alcoholic.
It's not.
It. I mean, this one is 4.3% alcohol by volume. That's pretty low.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it's almost a light beer in that sense.
O'Hara's, huh?
And it's good. Like, so there were two different ones.
And it's imported from Ireland?
And it's, yeah, it's imported. It's craft brewed in Ireland.
Interesting.
I don't know where in Ireland it was, where it says,
Yeah, I don't know, but,
County Carlo.
County Carlo.
From Carlo Brewing Company.
Well, there you go.
I think I've heard of Carlo actually brewing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you like it.
The town, I don't know if I can pronounce it.
You probably can't.
Baganalstown.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
I'll call it Bageltown and we'll be done with it.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's what we're drinking.
Excellent.
So, excellent.
Always a good time.
And if listeners have suggestions.
We are open to suggestions.
It doesn't have to be beer. It could be wine. Could be scotch, whiskey, yeah, soda, bourbon, coffee. I mean, it could be any of those things. Send them along.
We're open to that.
Yeah, and send it to feedback at thefathersshow.com.
Yeah, we like to hear what you're drinking, too, so that you know, because, I mean, sometimes you'd be drinking something we never would have thought of, and it might be nice for us.
And you know, and sometimes it's stuff that we can't get a hold of that's brewed locally and it doesn't ship across the country.
That could be
true,
too.
But I'd love to hear about it.
We'd love to hear about it.
So the big news today, as we record this, today, in fact, starting right about now, it's opening day.
Opening day.
Everybody who lives in a baseball town knows what opening day is. It is a high holy day.
It is. And people take the day off, half days from work. It's one of those days in baseball that, you know, you really just, it hope springs eternal on opening day because your team could actually be a contender. Even though it's not.
On opening day,
everybody's record is equal. The same.
Everybody has the same hope for.
That's right. And that's why I think everybody loves it. Plus, around here, opening day brings up and conjures images of, you know, spring and weather that's not, you know, cold and rainy and snowy and icy and, all that stuff that I hate and have grown to loathe.
Right. It feels like the summer. I mean, it's...
Yeah, although today doesn't feel like quite the summer. It's about 50 degrees out.
Well, it's the high today is supposed to be 50. It's 54 right now.
Yeah.
The high today is supposed to be 58.
Which is creeping into territory that is comfortable.
Right.
But, you know, I think, you know, for Red Sox fans, which we are, you know, for years, opening day was a big deal because it was, like I said earlier, it was the day where everybody's record was the same and everybody had the same shot and didn't matter what you were the previous year.
And at the end of opening day, we go, well, there's always next year.
There's always next year. Now, you know, 2004 changed all that,
it
obviously,
did.
You know, with 04, 07, and 13. And so they loaded up this past year, or at least attempted to, and we'll see what happens. I mean, with price down, I'm not sure how this is all going to go. I mean, you know, you got some relievers out too. It's going to be interesting. And this year, in particular, with no David Ortiz,
right.
The first year without Big Papi, I'm very
offensively
nervous.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, but it's they do have a nice young team. And I've been impressed this spring with Pablo Sandoval and his sort of rededication to.
He's not the chubby panda anymore.
Yeah. Rededication to his sport, to his body, to, you know, his craft. And maybe he's going to take it a little bit more seriously. I think getting the money, from the Red Sox a few years ago, and sometimes that changes a guy. And especially when you're talking like $100 million, you know, and it's all guaranteed. So you know, sometimes it changes a guy and, you know, but I think he saw what happened last year and he doesn't want to be embarrassed again. And I think he came into the spring looking good and he's had a great spring.
Right.
And the spring stats don't mean anything, but it's good trend.
Yes, that's the idea. And is it? It's at home, right? Some family.
Oh yeah.
It's sort of unusual the last few years for them to open in Fenway.
Yeah, you know.
Usually they try to give them a week on the road to get the last of the winter weather out.
Well, that would be the ideal thing to do. Yeah. You know, I don't think we should open April whatever it is, April 3rd in Massachusetts. It's hit or miss, man, and you can have a big miss.
Well, I'm looking.
Just 2 days ago, it was snowing.
Yes. And it was not where we are right now, but like, you know, a little further west and north, it was substantial snow.
Yeah, but still, it was cruddy weather where we were. It was a combination of snow and rain, and so sometimes it was snowing, sometimes it was raining, sometimes it was doing both. I called that strain.
It was straining,
and it's just. And you don't know what to do. You don't know what to wear. Do I wear a raincoat? Do I wear a heavy coat? What do I wear? Because I'm not sure what it's doing out there. You know, and I'm like, can you just pick one?
Could you one or the other?
One or the other.
Hey, I was rooting for the rain because my snowblower has been down. I finally got it.
Again?
Well, still. Because I didn't tell you that. So the last storm we got, about 90% of the way through, the snowblower just stopped. And wouldn't restart. It would fire up, but it wouldn't keep running.
I hate your snowblower.
So do I. This may be its last season here, and it'll be replaced.
I hope so, because that's more work than it's worth.
Exactly. So it was the spark plug. I had to change the spark plug, but I didn't have a spark plug ratchet socket.
Of course
not.
So
I had to order one. Because my brother, the truck driver, is like, why don't you just go down to Napa and buy one?
Well, right.
Because I don't do that. I order things from Amazon. They show up at my door. This is how it works. I go to the Amazon.com, and then 2 days later, a thing is at my door.
Your
magically.
Brother has a point. You and I both order everything pretty much online.
Yes.
However, in an emergency situation.
Well, it wasn't quite an emergency.
Where my snowblower wasn't working, I might go down to the Napa and...
Well, it wasn't quite an emergency situation. Mm. But, I mean, if this were November and I was... I might have... Or December, I might have run down. Well, I mean, I did actually... I went to go to fix it yesterday. And so I've got the new socket, but it's a half-inch drive instead of a 3/8-inch drive. So I had to go... out and get.
Did you go to Napa?
So I went to Napa, and it was shut. It was closed because it's Sunday.
Of course it was.
So I had to go all the way to Home Depot, where it was crazy.
Oh, that's so funny.
This is why I don't go to stores. People.
Yeah.
The problem with stores
is people.
Is other people.
Other
this
people.
This is Jean-Paul Sartre's theory on stores.
Okay.
The problem with stores is other people.
Other people. I like that.
And
you could write a whole book on that.
Exactly. So I went. So I got a ratchet, and I got a new $2. You see my new $2 by your feet there, Father Chip.
I was wondering what was hampering me spreading out.
I don't have a garage. I don't have an attic. I don't have any place to put stuff. So it goes under the desk.
It's very nice, though.
It's nice. It's big. It holds everything. I have to find a better place for it.
Fill it up with all your Amazon tools.
Exactly. Well, that's what I got. So I did. I replaced it. It fired up. It seemed to run.
Yeah.
But it was kind of. I felt like I needed some snow to run it through to make sure it was actually working.
Maybe it needs a tune-up.
It might need a tune-up. I don't want to take it down to the guy, like, because I don't have a truck. I have my car. And I have a van.
Well, you have the big van.
Yeah, but when in the van, I got to take seats out. And again, I don't have a garage, so the seats have to sit out in the weather. So
that's not good.
It's a pain. Everything's a pain. It's a pain.
I know.
When I got a new car last fall. When I went to get the new car, I briefly thought, should I go get a pickup? Like, should I get a pickup truck just because?
That would have been a great idea.
I know, because...
A big one, but, you know...
Yeah, like a Ford Ranger size.
Size, yeah.
Do they even make the Ranger anymore?
I'm not sure that they do, but that size is a good size.
Yes, and it's not...
I'm sure that Toyota or somebody
So they're
makes
not
one.
Full-size pickups.
Right.
They're not F-150.
I know Dodge makes one, and... Yeah.
And I thought about that briefly.
You should have definitely, because you could have used it for all kinds of different stuff.
You got to carry mulch. You got to carry wood. Got to carry.
Think of all the things you could have done with that.
And it's almost always just me in the car.
Right. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
No one ever rides in that with you.
No. I mean, occasionally, if I'm going out to run an errand, I'll ask, hey, anybody want to go with me? And I take two of the kids. But it's not a necessity.
No.
I mean, there used to be a time when we'd have a relative visit. We had to only have the minivan.
Right.
That we would now overflow the minivan because we could only sit exactly my family.
Right.
If someone would come visit, and then we'd have to be taken to cars places. But that, now we have the big van.
You get the big van.
It's a nice van.
It is a nice van. Now, I guess the question arises, does... You have a commute that's fairly substantial from here to your job when you have to go into the office.
Yes.
Would a pickup truck have made a big difference in your weekly budget as far as gas goes?
That's part of it. That's certainly a pickup. I mean, it's 3 days a week. I only have to drive in 3 days a week. So...
But it's a good ride.
It's a
short ride.
It's
a stop and go
ride.
It's stop and go, exactly. And it's annoying.
Yeah. I mean, it's the worst. It is the worst.
Bad commute. Let's just leave it at that.
So yes, that was a factor. Is driving. I remember once years ago, so we're talking 25 years ago. A buddy of mine and I were driving up to Maine on a Friday night, and we're driving through Boston in his pickup truck.
Yeah,
an old 1979 Ford F-150 with the heaviest clutch. It was a standard.
I love it.
Said the heaviest clutch you can imagine, and he nearly got a leg cramp driving in stop and go traffic in Boston.
Well, thankfully, the clutches on the new vehicles are usually pretty good, and most of the pickup trucks are automatic. Yeah. So,
a pickup might have been a better choice.
It might have been only in the sense that it would have given you the opportunity to do things around your house that would be nice to be able to do.
Right.
You know, I mean, take the snowblower down to the guy, or
right. I mean, I get to take this the lawnmower in to get tuned up. You know, I mean, I could do some of it myself, but I got to get the blade sharpened and.
Yeah, can you take the blades off and just bring the blades to be sharpened?
Yeah, you can. It's kind of a pain. Okay, but yes, I can do that. Yeah, but if I want to buy,
everything's a pain. Everything's a pain.
Owning a house is a pain.
Everything's a pain. Can't you people just go away and leave me by myself?
Can I not get it? Can I not get the blade sharpened through Amazon?
That's right.
Can I not go to a website?
Can't they send a drone to my house?
Pick up the lawnmower.
Pick up the lawnmower.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Take it to the place. Send it back on the drone.
Now, speaking of home improvements, I got to tell you. So I have three fences around my backyard, and none of the three fences that border my backyard are mine. They all belong to the neighbors.
I love it.
So when you stand in the back door looking, to the right is this old decrepit fence that is like, was put up, it was Hadrian's Wall. It is like, it's like 1,000 years old. It is rotting away as the wind blows. But it has not fallen over. And,
there you go.
And frankly, I'm being patient with that guy. Now, the other two, the guy straight back, he put that fence up maybe 3-4 years ago. It's a brand new fence.
Yeah.
And then the guy to the left, that fence is pretty new as well.
Okay.
So last year, the fence to the left, that fell over into my yard.
Oops.
In a storm. So the post rotted out. So the guy next door, it's like this guy, he's a little older than I am, just a few years, but he's got an adult son who lives at home. So the son, I go in the backyard, I see it's standing up now, with a big post propping it up
in your yard,
in my yard.
Love it.
In my yard. I'm like,
I love it.
No, no,
that's awesome.
No. I walk right over to that fence, take it off the fence.
Oh, no, and then it falls.
No, it stayed standing for a while. I threw it over the fence, though, the post. Then later on, knock, knock, knock. Hey, so about the fence. I'm like, yes, you're not propping up your fence. Because I got kids running around there. What if they trip over the thing, knock it out, and it falls on them?
Oh my gosh.
So
this has to go in a book somewhere. Dom's Guide to Living with Neighbors. I took his post and I threw it over the fence.
Good fences make good neighbors. These are bad fences.
Apparently so.
So he got some wood and he jammed it in the hole. More vertical to hold it up.
Oh my gosh.
That didn't last long. It fell over. If you looked outside, it's now tied with string to the post.
I gotta go take a look at this after we're done here.
After we're done here.
This is so funny.
So after last week's storm, it's like that string is on its last legs and it's like holding on. Just it's like Spider-Man holding two halves of that ferry together in that new trailer.
Oh, that new trailer looks awesome, looks good, by the way.
But it looks like that. Now the guy behind me His fence fell over. There was no reason that fence should have fell over.
It's 3 years old.
Right. So what he did was he got a metal pole and jammed it into the ground and attached it with screws to the... Of course, it's on my side, but that's okay. It's standing. And it's not propped in. Like, I'm okay with it. It's not... I mean, it's on my side. It's only visually on my side. I don't care.
Okay.
So I don't know what to do about this guy on the left, this kid with the dad. And
don't know, man.
I'm not paying to put a fence up over there. That's his fence. It's his responsibility.
Yeah. Would you be happier if he just took the fence down?
Not really.
Because there's your option, right? You know,
he
takes the fence down, or he gets the fence fixed, which he probably can't do because he can't afford it.
Right.
And
that's what I'm guessing, is he can't really afford to get it fixed.
That's my guess. Yeah, and you don't want the post on your side, I get.
Well, I don't want it propped. I mean, get it fixed right. That's all I mean.
Which he clearly can't afford. If he could afford it, he would have done it.
So if he just leaves it laying down for a while, that's fine.
Okay.
It makes it easier for when the kids knock the ball over the fence. They don't have to run around.
All right.
I mean, would I rather have a fence? Yes. Is it absolutely necessary to have a fence? No.
Do you want to put up a fence?
That's the problem is I'd rather put up a fence on the other side where the fence is rotting away.
Right.
I can't afford to put up two fences. Frankly, right now, I give after fixing the roof and the ceiling and the other stuff.
A tailored suit.
Custom suit. Fence. I need a suit, so I get a custom suit. So that's that.
We are so far off the rails today. It's not even funny. We're talking about fences. I don't even remember talking about that pre-show.
Okay. We got a far field from opening day somehow.
Yeah. And opening day baseball, baby. I'm psyched.
Yes.
And you're psyched. It's a good time.
Yes.
You know, we don't want to bore people with our Red Sox fandom. We're Red Sox fans.
There's 162 games to go. We can bore them with that.
We can get you later. But opening day, suffice to say, it's awesome.
It's awesome. We're excited.
Yes.
So
what else are we doing?
Well, we were going to talk about this Mike Pence thing.
Oh yeah, I saw this and I thought to myself, see, this is my worldview. This will tell you a lot about me.
Oh, do you want to tell what it is?
I will.
Okay.
I'm going to get there.
Oh, okay.
So Mike Pence,
the vice president,
in an interview that he gave back in 2002,
right,
mentioned that he does not eat dinner or lunch with
females. He doesn't go out for dinner or meals.
Meals with females that aren't his wife.
Alone. Yeah.
And so that got picked up.
Well, and...
Oh, and he doesn't drink.
He doesn't go to social occasions...
Unless his wife is with him.
Right, that have drinking.
Right.
Unless his wife is with him.
Yeah. Right. Now, when I read that, initially, because I read it on some neutral source or conservative source, I thought to myself, well, that's nice, because, you know, he's married, and he's making an effort to, you know... preserve his marriage and preserve the special relationship he has with his wife. And I thought, and he's not putting himself in a place where someone can make some sort of false accusation against him.
Right.
He's also, let's be honest, not putting himself into a space where he could make a bad decision. And
exactly.
That's not bad either.
That is not a bad thing.
And that's not a bad thing. So I applaud him on that. And I think he's making good choices. These are good choices he's making.
Right.
And of course, he gets lambasted on the left because he's somehow being sexist.
Well, the thing is they're saying things like, oh, women are so irresistible to Mike Pence that he's going to have to jump on them.
That's not the point.
Or that women will attack him. And I'm like, no, like this is yet more evidence of how the left... And the media, I'm sorry, we're going to get a little political. And the media are out of touch. Like, they missed it in the election. There are many men out there in America who understand the same thing.
Right. Like, they love their wives.
Right.
And they want to respect them. And there's nothing more pro-woman, in my opinion, than that. Because they love their wives and they respect them. They want to hold up the sanctity of their marriage.
Right.
And it's not some dastardly plot to keep other women down, you know, which is now the latest thing I'm hearing is because he won't have meals with women by himself or go to drinks with women by himself.
It disadvantages his female employees.
Which,
Actually, a female employee
have said
that two
female employees that I've seen have said that is not the case.
And in fact, he didn't make it a practice to have meals with any of his employees one-on-one.
Right.
Which is probably a good practice.
The more I learn about Mike Pence, the more I like him.
Exactly.
I really think he's going to be the counterbalance on this administration that they need, and I think he's like the adult in the room. I mean, if he could somehow exert more influence over the president, I think we'd have a lot better administration going forward.
He might have be already. I feel like
he might be. He may be.
Now, although again, we don't want to go too much into politics.
I know, but but. This is important.
Yeah.
You know, this is important to me as a Catholic priest because I see the guys in my parish that struggle. I hear things in confessionals that about men and women who struggle with, let's just lay it out there. They struggle with temptation. They struggle with pornography. They struggle with, masturbation. Let's just say it. And they struggle with these things. And, you know, when I hear about a guy who's trying to live his life in a way that is respectful to his wife and respectful towards women, and he's on the national stage, and I think he really is a good example. It makes me feel good that we have people. Now, Mike Pence is not perfect. I know that, and he knows that. And I think, but he's trying in his imperfectness. He's trying to make sure that he is a better man.
As someone asked in a headline, who would you rather be married to? Which politician would you rather be married to? Mike Pence or Anthony Weiner?
Well, exactly. I mean, you can throw out a lot of different politicians. I mean,
and this is specifically to politicians. I mean, this or anyone who's a public figure,
right?
They've got
and it can go the other way,
right? But any public figure has to be especially careful in giving the wrong impression about what's going on. I mean,
think if Bill Clinton had had this rule in his life. I mean,
would be very different.
His presidency would be viewed differently. His post presidency would be viewed differently. His wife would have been viewed differently. Everything could have been different for Bill Clinton. His legacy could have been different had he had this rule in his life. And you know what? Shame on him for not having something like this in his life. I think this is pretty cool. I support the vice president on this 100% because I think, you know, look, I have been on the record. I didn't even vote for Trump, okay? I didn't vote for Hillary, but I didn't vote for Trump either. And, you know, But I'm not going to sit back and watch a guy get lambasted in the media for something that's good. This shows what the disease and the of the lack of values in America, if you ask me.
So this is a sort of we're talking about guys honoring their wives by this rule. What about for priests? Like, you know, priests are in a precarious position too. I mean, going out to dinner with with a woman by themselves.
Yes, and it can be an issue. I don't necessarily follow the Mike Pence rule. Maybe I should, but I don't. I have friends that are women, and sometimes you go to lunch, you go to dinner. Now that being said, I probably if I go out to dinner with a buddy, a male friend, I might have a few beers. If I go out to dinner with a woman, I probably won't. You know, just because I want to be clear on where the lines of demarcation are. You know, in my life, and I don't want to let anything impair my decision making when it comes to stuff like that. I think we all have to be careful about the choices we make.
But also, you don't want to give scandal to others. Even if nothing is going on, you don't want to give the impression that something's going
on. That's true. I went to dinner with a friend out in California who happens to be a woman. Of course, I was dressed in civilian clothes, so I hope that wouldn't bring scandal to anybody. But, it was... it was a moment too where I was like, okay, I'm having soda. You know, I had diet soda, and she did too, to be perfectly honest. So it was, it was a nice discussion. It was a discussion of church matters, as a matter of fact, because a lot of women are involved in the church, and that's another thing. You know, I mean, we have a lot of female employees, we have a lot of female volunteers. If I didn't have opportunities necessarily where I wouldn't have dinner or lunch with anybody, you know, right. some days. So it's, I think it's a case by case basis. You have to realize, for me anyway, it is a case by case basis. I mean, I don't typically go out to dinner by myself with, single women. I think, a married woman and myself, we both have a same level of, you know,
of the commitment
of commitment.
Yep.
And so it, neither one of us wants to break that commitment. I think we're fine. Going out to dinner with a single woman is a different level. She has a different level of commitment in life than I do. And that might be something where I'd be a little bit more cautious about doing something like that.
Right. Well, because frankly, we've seen priests who got burned.
Oh, yeah.
They burned themselves.
They burned themselves, yeah. Right. I mean, I know a priest who, you know, yeah, got himself in trouble. I mean,
he ended up getting, it was too late on the table. They ended up getting too close to women that they spend too much time with. They create a particular friendship.
Yes.
And they spend too much time with them. And then they develop feelings. Priests have feelings just like every other guy.
That's right.
And they can develop feelings, and then that,
and they, you know, the feelings can be mutual, and then the next thing you know, you know, a priest is leaving the priesthood,
right?
And that's the, like, no one wants that,
right? Well, it's like a broken marriage. I mean,
exactly.
you're breaking a vow of service that you made, and
right.
it's just never ideal.
So I think what Mike Pence is doing is really sort of modeling something that's important for people to think about.
It certainly should make all of us guys, especially all married guys, all priests, step back and look at your own situation.
Think again, about it.
Everybody's situation different. So look at your own situation and how are you protecting your marriage?
Right.
How are you protecting your vows?
Right.
To your vocation.
Yeah.
And just think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. You know, there's no hard and fast rule, obviously. You know, they've called this the Billy Graham rule. I guess it was Billy Graham's rule that
he never
did.
Traveled alone with a woman, went out to dinner alone with a woman, all that sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah. So, and I can understand that. You know, Billy Graham certainly is a far more public figure than I am, even though I'm a public figure. And so is Mike Pence, for that matter. I mean, in comparison, the vice president of the United States to a parish priest in the middle of Massachusetts somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. He's a bigger deal than me. However, I think, you know, for all of us, anyone who's listening, it's good to think about these things. That's the important thing. I think is as long as we are thinking about it, formulating strategies, and looking at our lives and how we can limit the times where we can put ourselves in a place where it might either A, lead to scandal, B, lead to something that shouldn't happen, C, you know, bring temptation into our lives that we don't need. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's worthy of a conversation. Everybody's different, and every, you know, you don't want to, shoehorn every single person into Mike Pence's rule. You know, I mean,
right.
That's not right either. I mean, you know, we...
I don't think he would ever suggest
that. Exactly. I don't think he would either.
He's doing something that works for
him.
That
works for him. And I think he shouldn't be lambasted for that. In fact, it shouldn't even be a story at all.
Right. It is a non-story. The only thing that makes it a story is frankly, a public figure who honors his marriage.
Right.
Is good to see once in a while.
You know, and let's be honest. I mean, he's somebody that I actually respect and wouldn't feel bad having people that I know be around him.
Well,
as a politician,
to take this back to the political side a little bit, I mean, given how people reacted to Trump's comments about women last October, I don't understand why we're suddenly the same people are attacking Pence for being the opposite.
Right.
You can't win.
You can't win.
Which goes to show that this isn't really about this. The outrage is really about politics.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Right.
And these same people that are lambasting Mike Pence, and who did lambaste rightly President Trump.
He deserved that for those comments.
These are the same people who gave Bill Clinton the pass. Sorry.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Right. By and large,
they're the same people that gave Bill Clinton the pass. And that's not it. Bill Clinton shouldn't have been given a pass.
Right.
I just,
it's about the hypocrisy.
Exactly.
It's not about the particular,
it's about the hypocrisy. It really annoys me. That kind of hypocrisy really bugs me. And you see it now all the time in politics, because the media, let's face it, is primarily a tool of one side of the spectrum and not the other.
Give people the benefit of the doubt
and
think about what's really motivating.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all.
Yep.
I mean, I think, you know, listen, Mike Pence is not the savior. Jesus Christ is.
Right.
But Mike Pence is doing something I think that, you know, more men might, if they really thought about their marriages a lot and took them seriously, they might consider it too.
Yep.
That's all. That's what I thought. When the topic came up, when we were deciding what we wanted to talk about today, that's all I thought about it. I didn't want to make a big political deal out of it. Like I said, I didn't even vote for the man. So, you know, I don't really have a dog in this fight, per se. I just think that, you know, when you look at the hypocrisy of the whole thing, mm-hmm. of the media giving this guy a hard time for something that's a good thing, right. You know, then that's what really gets my quote-unquote Irish up.
Irish up. That's a signal for me to drink some more of my beer.
Drink some of my Irish stout.
So that brings us, I think we've said enough about that. So it's time for Picks of the Week. And
I wish we had a theme song for Picks of the Week.
I'm going to have to come up with some bumpers for this.
Pick of the Week, Pick of the Week. It's our time for the Pick of the Week.
Well, our friend Pat Gohn, who's got a voice for radio. I mean, she's got a great voice
for
radio.
She does have a great radio voice.
She did a bumper for another show called Catholic Weekend. It doesn't exist anymore, but they did a Pick of the Week in their show, and she did, you know, a bumper for
a much,
that.
Much better bumper than I just did.
Yeah. Much. But maybe I can steal that for our show.
Ask them.
I'll ask the executive director of SQPN if I can.
You should do that.
Given that I'm the executive director of SQPN.
Right. I love that. I'm going to ask myself. What do you think, self?
What's your pick, Father Chip?
I have two books I think I would like to recommend. One is a fiction book by Mark Greaney. Mark Greaney, Greaney.
Yes.
It's called The Gray Man.
I am reading that right now.
I just finished it a couple of weeks ago. I finished it in like 3 days.
Yeah.
I got like engrossed in it. And I just, it was one of those.
That's awesome that we're both reading it.
Yeah, I finished it. It's amazing. It's a great thriller, and I love spy thrillers. I love these guys, these action hero types that are like almost indestructible. You know, this guy, the Gray Man, while he's almost indestructible, he gets hurt.
He reminds me a little bit of Jack Bauer.
Yeah. Jack Bauer.
He takes a lot of damage.
And even what's his name? Jason Bourne. You know, he's Jason Bourne-esque.
I kind of think the picture like a little Matt Damon, Jason Bourne. Yes. Yeah.
So The Gray Man, and which I really, really, really loved. I'm done with it. Dom's reading it right now. And then the other one I wanted to quickly recommend was Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. F-E-R-I-S-S.
Oh, Tim Ferriss again.
Again, I know. I've become like a Tim Ferriss stalker. And
Tim Ferriss groupie alert.
I am. And Tools of Titans, if you like his podcast, which I recommended the last time, you'll love Tools of Titans. It's a great book. You don't have to read it. It's not one of those books you have to read from cover to cover. You can pick and choose what you want to read from it. And he even says that. You know, it is one of those things. It's not like some other books where you should, you know, definitely read right from the beginning to the end. But it's one of those books where you can go back and like, what did that guy do in that situation, or what is that guy's speciality, or whatever. So those two books, but that I definitely highly recommend. If you like Jason Bourne or Jack Bauer, you will love The Gray Man. It is a action-packed thriller.
You know, the great thing about The Gray Man and Mark Greaney is that. When Tom Clancy died.
Oh, yeah. He took over.
He took over for a while. Now, he's not. He's now doing his own series. Right. They've got someone else coming in.
Right.
But he did a great job.
That's what I hear.
With those characters, continuing them on.
Yeah.
I was really pleased. I was actually sad to see that he was not going to continue doing it. So The Gray Man, and it's Gray Man number one. It's a new series.
It is. There's multiple books in it already.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's written... several Gray Man stories already, and so I'm looking forward to reading the second one, and but I'm waiting. I'm sort of waiting because I want to parcel them out
because
I'm new to the Mark Greaney world, you know. So I don't want to rush through them and then like be like waiting for the next one,
right?
You know, so yeah, I think you know, I think people ought to give Mark Greene a shot if they're looking for a book series and an author to read. I know a lot of people love Tom Clancy, and Tom Clancy was, you know, especially in the spy world, he was, you know, those kinds of stories. He's beloved, Robert Ludlum, those kind of authors. And I think Mark Greene, he's our age. He's hopefully got a few more years left of him of writing. And
well, another author in this vein was Vince Flynn.
Yeah, who unfortunately
passed away. Yeah. And they're trying to continue his series as well. We'll see how that goes.
You know what I find fascinating about all these things is when these authors die now, instead of their stories dying with them, they continue them on. They did the same thing with Robert B. Parker. They right. brought in several authors to continue the series that he had running between Spencer
yep.
and Jesse Stone and then the Western series that he had. So they brought in different authors to do that. And I've been so far with the Jesse Stone author and the Spencer author, they've been pretty good. Not great, but pretty good.
Yeah.
And I can deal with them because I like the characters. I, however, don't like when a guy who's writing the Spencer stories isn't in Boston, doesn't know really a lot about Boston,
right.
and says things that are impossible about like a street or a corner or right. you know, something where I'm like, wait, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
You know,
that's not true.
That's
here.
Not
yeah.
true. You can't make that turn. That turn doesn't exist, you know. Or something like that. But
right.
only the people in Boston would catch.
Exactly.
But still.
It reminds me of the TV show Fringe, the second episode of that.
It
was set in Boston.
Set in Boston.
But the second episode they were going to the waterfront in Stoughton.
Yeah.
Which
if Stoughton, you know, has no waterfront.
Stoughton is far from the water.
Far
it was,
from the water.
It was amusing.
What's your pick?
So my pick, actually, and since we're talking about books, I want to pick a book that I just finished called Cod, A Biography of the Fish That Changed the World. Oh. And you think, I love these books that kind of approach like one thing that seems sort of mundane, salt or tea or, you know...
Cod.
The
most boring fish in the world.
Well, in fact, cod is really an important fish, including in Catholic faith.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, it was the fish that people ate on Friday in Europe because it was the salt fish.
Right.
And like, it was a great read. It was kind of heavy on the climate change, conservation thing. It was a little bit. But, you know, there's some truth to it. I mean, my grandfather was a fisherman out of Gloucester and born in Sicily. I mean, he was a fisherman. But I recognize the cod stocks are depleted. Fish stocks are generally depleted. There was an article in the Globe today about the problems of the fish stocks. So, you know, I don't entirely disagree with him. He definitely has a point of view. But the stories about, you know, the fishermen, When the guy Cabot discovered the St. Lawrence Seaway, you know, he just quote unquote discovered, I'm making air quotes.
Right.
He reported that there were 1,000 Basque fishing boats.
Hey, look what I found.
Yeah, look what I found. Hey, guys, look what I found.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I found this.
I found this place.
This is mine.
But just like really remarkable stories. It's well worth a read. So that's
interesting.
That was a good
All
book.
Right. All right.
But the other pick I wanted to pick was a TV show called The Good Place.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I had not watched this.
Through the magic of the internet.
But through the magic of streaming video, I binge watched all 13 episodes. It's finished airing its first season. And it's by the same one of the guys who did The Office and Parks and Rec.
Right.
So it's got a lot of that same vibe. And the premise is this woman is, it starts with this woman has died and she wakes up in the good place, which there is how they reference heaven. And it turns out, and I'm not going to spoil anything by telling you this because you find out in the first 5 minutes, there's been a mistake. Her name is like Ellen Shellstrop and she's the wrong Ellen Shellstrop. Like she's got the same name as this saintly woman who died at the same time she did. And in fact, it turns out they died in the same accident.
Oh, wow.
And so the good one ended up in the bad place and she ends up in the good place. And she's really a terrible person.
She's not a good person.
She's not a good person. But there's a couple things about this show that it's funny. It's funny in that Parks and Rec, The Office sort
of
way.
Yeah.
But there's a couple things I like about it. One, it's really good for a primetime TV sitcom. There's a lot of philosophy in this.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you learn about consequentialism and
right.
like all the different kinds of moral philosophy. The other thing is it's a very interesting look at how Hollywood sees the afterlife, how a certain sort of secular viewpoint, like, you know, when you, like, everything is points based. It's, you very much earn heaven.
Yeah, no, there's, I've seen about five episodes of the show. Yeah. And I agree with you. There's a certain amount of you do X, you get Y version of heaven.
You get points and demerits. And so you add up all your points. And if you're above a certain point total,
yeah,
you get to heaven. And like, if you're a terrible person your whole life and you do these wildly amazing gestures at the end, you're in. Or vice versa. You could be a saint and then become a horrible person. But as long as it doesn't it's not what we as Christians would see. There's no personal God. There's no relationship with God.
Right.
So it's lacking that, but it's still a fascinating look. It's still funny, and it's pretty clean. In fact, there's a funny bit where in The Good Place you can't curse.
Oh, I love that part.
So the whole time, you know, she's saying things like, you know, fork
and fudge
and shirt.
Yeah.
Instead of the four letter words.
And the actress is
Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell, who I like. She's genuinely, she seems like she always typically plays a likable character.
Yeah.
She's not real likable in this.
To be honest, I don't find her real likable in real life.
No.
I
like those commercials she does with husband.
Well, she's a decent actress in that sense, but she's kind of a weirdo in real life.
Oh, I don't know anything about her.
But in this series, it's kind of this funny where she's kind of, I think they by casting her like this, they're kind of playing off this, but it's Veronica Mars. She's supposed to be nice, but she's not. And so
I think this is this is one of those opportunities that sometimes actors take where they play against the type that they've always played.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like what LeBlanc did with the
episodes
playing against his image as Joey Tribbiani,
the likable Joey,
right?
Because in that he was, oh my gosh, he's so bad.
Exactly. So anyway.
So this is good. And I got to recommend, I'm not going to spoil anything, but like I was telling Father Chip, because he's only done five episodes, stick with it to the last episode of the season, to see episode 13. Everything pays off. Like, whatever your objections are,
better.
whatever your objections are, it's, I think it paid. There's a payoff. I don't want to tell you what it is because you got to kind of just approach it not knowing it's coming. But there's a payoff that explains everything.
There you go.
So, The Good Place.
There you go.
So that's it. I mean, this is, well.
This is a long one, folks.
We did a short one last time. We've got an hour and 20 this time. So.
Sorry. Or not. Maybe you like it.
Maybe enjoy it. Maybe you would want to hear us talk for 2 hours. Yeah. What I suggest is put it on 2X on your podcast player, and it takes half as much time.
There you go. And if you like it, send us an email or shoot us a something on Twitter or whatever and tell us, hey.
Are we too long?
Are we too long?
Are we too short?
Do we like you guys when you talk?
Do we talk too fast?
We don't like you. We hate you. We love you.
I have to admit, Father Chip, when I edit the show and I listen, I talk way faster than any other podcast that I listen to.
Well, you are a quick talker.
I'm a fast talker.
You are.
I got that complaint when I was on the radio.
No.
So anyway, this has been The Father's Show. Our website is at thefathersshow.com. You can email us, like I said, at feedback@thefathersshow.com. On Twitter, the show is at The Father's Show. I'm at BetNet.
I'm at Chines, Chines.
And my BetNet is BETTNET. We're on Facebook at facebook.com, The Father's Show. And if you like the show, please recommend us to your friends. Share links to our website on social media.
Subscribe.
Subscribe to the show. Write a review of the podcast on iTunes. That helps other people find the show. It all helps. And with that, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
So long.